Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast. It's the 13th day of March 2012, and I am so happy that you are with me. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I have a great show for you today. We have, from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, cognitive psychology researcher Dr. Anthony McCaffrey, and he has discovered or has put together a theory on how all of us can unlock our creativity. He really tears it apart down to the basics so that we can start really thinking outside of the box rather than just saying, well, you know, now it's time to think outside the box. Dr. McCaffrey has been so kind with his time that I'm going to devote the entire podcast to my interview with him. So get that paper and pencil ready. He's going to give us some very important tips on how we can unlock that creativity within all of us. Now, the website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Thank you so much for all the emails that you are sending. Some really great comments and tips. Thank you for commenting on some of the articles. Make sure you're visiting the website. I try to put up articles just about every day. You can follow me on Twitter as well. That's at Dr. Zafiridis. And we're on iTunes as well. You may be listening to it right now. But if you want to take the Healthy Mind with you in a more portable fashion, please look for us on iTunes. And as always, if you have any questions, comments, criticisms, especially the criticisms, I want to learn to make this a better show. Don't hesitate to email me with anything. The email address, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I am really excited about this next guest on The Healthy Mind. A little bit of information on how we were fortunate enough to have Dr. Tony McCaffrey join us on The Healthy Mind. I haven't even told him this yet, but as I normally do in getting ready for the shows or for the website, I'll go through my newsreader, and I have different categories where I just kind of put things to remind me to go back and look at them, and one of them is interviews. I have blog and headlines and websites and the like. So about a month or two ago, I had put away a very interesting article that I had read that had come out of the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, and had said, wow, this seems like a really interesting story, and had put it away, haven't even thought about it. And, you know, as I tend to do, as all of us do, we get distracted. But then this past week, I had been looking online and came across a very interesting release that came from the Association of Psychological Science on an individual by the name of Dr. Anthony McCaffrey. And it was along the same lines, but a slightly different theory. So I wasn't even thinking. I said, this guy I've got to interview. But I thought, oh, wait, I've got something that I've already put away of someone I want to contact and interview. And as I went back and looked at that folder, it was the same person. So that really motivated me to get moving here and get Dr. McCaffrey on the line. He is a postdoctoral fellow currently, University of Massachusetts at Amherst, where he studies e-design, which really creates electronic tools to assist engineers out in the computer arena. He has his PhD in cognitive psychology as well from the University of Massachusetts Amherst. And he has some wonderful theories here on how we can be more creative, really kind of parsing it out. And I'm going to let him tell us all about this. But what really drew me to it was what I felt was a real interesting way of thinking about how we think, and ways that Dr. Caffrey is now studying in order to allow us to be more creative, maybe unlocking some of the automatic ways that we think, and really how to unlock that to become more creative, and I would imagine more productive and the like. So it is with great privilege. We're very, very happy and honored to have him on the show today. Dr. Tony McCaffrey, thank you for joining us.
Well, my pleasure, Peter. Thank you for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
That's wonderful. You know what, and I hadn't told you about that, kind of partly because I wanted you to kind of appreciate how I came about getting to know you. But the first thing that I had looked at was from back in February, and you had talked about a theory that you had put together called the obscure features hypothesis. And then what I had seen more recently was the generic part technique. And really, just to kind of get started at first, was maybe tell us a little bit about yourself and how, you know, your career has gone and led you to this, and then we'll get into some of the amazing research that you're doing.
Well, yes. Well, I've always been interested in creativity. As a kid, everybody makes up games, puzzles, stories. But then I really started to get interested in how to research it. And so first I went into the artificial intelligence area and learned a lot there, but I just felt there was this kind of rigidity about having a computer be creative completely on its own. And so I pulled back a little bit and I said, oh, let me study philosophy. And I got some new ideas from modern philosophers and ancient philosophers on the idea. And of course, the next logical step would be to go teach elementary school, right?
That seems like where you would go.
Where I go. So I went into the classroom, and as I taught the material, I was watching and observing. I'd give them a study diet of puzzles, and I'd observe how they get stuck and how I might get them unstuck without giving them direct hints, but more kind of methods for doing this. And after several years of doing this, I started to have this beginnings of a theory to help people be more creative, kind of welling up within me. And I decided I'm going to go back to grad school one more time, cognitive psychology, and piece all this lifelong journey together. And fortunately, it's come out very well at the other end, because that's what my dissertation's all about, this obscure features hypothesis.
Yes, so it really came from just, as I understand it, really your own curiosity, in essence, in terms of just seeing, hey, this is how things have been done and how we come about being creative, but it just left you wanting for more? I mean, is that fair to say where kind of the spark is coming from?
Definitely. There's lots of speculation about creativity, and there's kind of mystery about it. But there's not until recently I wanted to find out the scientific, you know, what do we know and what don't we know?
Yes, exactly.
What can we systematize and help people, and what has to remain a mystery where people just finally reach that aha moment? It's kind of like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. How far can we lead people? And then they just have to mysteriously piece it together on their own at the end. So it's got the science and the mystery, which I like both ends of it too.
Gosh, it just sounds fascinating. I mean, we see that at least on my end within medicine and psychiatry, where it really is a bit of that. And I could certainly respect from your, you know, cognitive psychology background is really essentially what we do is maybe give people tools to think about things in a different way or challenge those automatic ways of thinking. And in that way, they start thinking differently and their mood is better. But it really is fascinating to look at it from creativity, because, yeah, you don't really think about that. It's like, yeah, this person's creative. Oh, yeah, this person really did well or is an inventor. But, you know, tell us a little bit about that. What have you been able through your research to find out about, you know, how exactly does creativity, you know, happen? What exactly is that in terms of how we know it, at least at this point?
Right. So the obscure features hypothesis kind of gets at this essential pattern that happens, in which people are working on something and they're noticing the common features, but when you analyze all these inventions, there was something uncommon and something obscure or overlooked that they noticed, and then all of a sudden they pieced it together and built a solution based on this obscure thing. So maybe the a famous example would be the Wright brothers and flying. And so before that, you see all these black and white videos of these incredibly funny flying machines.
That's right.
They're flapping and twirling, and they're doing all kinds of movement to imitate birds and all these various ways. And then everyone was fixated on that. And all of a sudden, maybe not all of a sudden, but people said, okay, not a flexible moving wing, but a fixed wing. And it's like, initially, that sounds crazy because that's not how nature does it. But it turned out that that was the key insight that they could build a flying machine off of for humans.
Yeah, and I guess what you're trying to do is at least maybe increase the odds or try to understand how a person says, using your example, how about a fixed wing? We'd never thought about that. I mean, is that what you're hoping to maybe try and exploit or understand so that we can maybe provoke that in ourselves every day or in a practical application?
Yeah, so I'm trying to make this systematic approach, and from a psychologist standpoint, articulate all the different ways that people get fixated on something.
Yes.
And then come up with a counter technique. So the most famous obstacle is called functional fixedness, where you get stuck on the common function or use of an object. So when you look at a candle, most people get stuck on that the candle, the wick of the candle is used to give off light.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the wick is also a string. And if you needed to, you could get that string out of there and tie something together in an emergency.
I see.
And most people overlook that. So it's how do you help people notice these things? And so the one way is when it's the power of words. So when I say the word wick, I am assuming or implying a use. And so the generic parts technique says, okay, it implies a use, come up with a more generic description. And so fiber and strands and string, and then you go, oh, there could be other uses for this thing. So it's a general habit you can develop of analyzing the parts and make sure you get beneath all this language that implies a use.
I see. So if I understand that, then the generic parts technique is kind of in service to the overall hypothesis, right? I mean, this is something that you would utilize as a means to just broaden your scope. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the generic parts technique is one technique. It helps overcome functional fixedness, which is one obstacle to noticing obscure features.
Okay.
So another example that is a kind of a real life everyone would relate to is that the sinking of the Titanic. Now, everybody knows the tragedy that happened, and there weren't enough lifeboats, but there was this huge resource available, but people were fixated on icebergs are for hitting things, mm-hmm. for sinking ships. And the iceberg, if you get beneath it, it was huge. It might have been as long and as wide as the ship, and it's this floating thing. So to see it as a lifeboat as opposed to that which is killing us, suddenly you have this floating surface there. Maybe you could gotten people up to keep them out of the water long enough until help arrived.
I see, instead of seeing it as the enemy or the cause of the problem.
Right, yeah, switching the framework and seeing it as a resource. And so, unfortunately, no one noticed that at the time.
Unfortunately.
Hindsight is 20/20.
No, that's absolutely right. You know, and I think, you know, why I thought, okay, I've got to get Dr. McCaffrey on the program for the example along that lines that you gave about the sweater, and there's like a little bit of a burr and you're looking at it and saying, oh my gosh, there's a snag here on my, it's just sticking onto my sweater. But then the person who is not kind of obscured by that, as you call it, the functional fixedness, would say, wait a minute, those things stick together. I think I'll make Velcro.
Exactly.
It's outstanding. For me, that was it right there. I thought, we've got to learn more about this.
So George Demestral, he didn't get stuck. Normally everybody's angry, annoyed by these things, but he paused and wanted to get beneath it, and he looked under a microscope, said, what's going on here? Why is this good? So there's kind of a switch between burrs sticking to clothing to all of a sudden two things fastening together. And that subtle change in perception made all the difference for him and for everybody else who uses Velcro.
That's right. And I think all of us, I think, can relate to that, maybe not as a dramatic invention in the sake of an invention like the airplane or Velcro, but that all of us, we've had our habits for whatever reason. Maybe they're healthy, maybe they're not, and we're kind of knocked down by either insecurity or emotions. We don't feel we can change, but yet for whatever reason, when that happens, it suddenly changes in terms of how we perceive the way we're behaving, especially if it's unhealthy, and we're able, you know, to change it. And I talk about that a lot on the podcast and on the website, simply because people are that powerful. I'm just curious, though, from your end, what is it? What have you been able to find, if you have thus far in your research? And congratulations on the grant that's come from, it was the National Science Foundation? Was it NSF?
Yes, it is.
Congratulations on that. Have you found any kind of characteristics or anything that has to be kind of in place in order to kind of move outside of that automatic thinking, or what causes it? Why are we so stuck? Can you, in terms of what you've done, have you found anything flushing out just yet?
Well, on the one hand, habits are very efficient and good. I mean, if I have to figure out how to sit in a chair every time I approach a chair, but if I want to be creative, then this habit becomes, the enemy, but that's a strong word. So I think there's a lot of just the attitude of openness, and I think people have a need. They need to have this openness, and then the techniques that we're developing can guide them to what they're not noticing.
I see.
But you got to have that initial attitude of openness, because I've talked to people. Well, I don't need any help. I'm creative enough. Well, you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know all that you're missing in front of you.
You're absolutely right. And you know, I've experienced that in my own life in terms of, yes, there are things that I've wanted to do. Maybe I never pictured putting together what I have right now in the podcast and the website and putting it together. But, you know, we also need others to help guide us, maybe in their expertise, just saying, hey, have you thought about doing it this way? And others have. And it's made such a difference in my life, because I hadn't. I kind of got stuck in my own way of thinking. And I think about that, how that happens in my patients in clinical practice, too. You know, some of our role is just to say, what are some other ways that you can think about this that don't cause you to so much anxiety or sadness? And I think it seems like there's many similarities there along the cognitive framework as it is with creativity here.
Definitely. So most of my research is working with engineering problems and physical objects, but I think down the line I'll be able to extend a lot of the same principles can apply to other domains. So I have a couple of students now who are trying to apply my general approach to comedy writing.
Yeah, I found that fascinating.
And so they just try to articulate, use obscure features and to articulate unusual situations and then mine it for comedic potential. So we just played around with some things recently where Suppose, what are the qualities an airline pilot should exhibit? And probably they're not afraid of heights.
Yes.
Well, if they were, that could make for a very funny comedy sketch if the pilot can only look straight forward and can't look down and freaks out if they do. So that's one way, but I think what you're getting at is a broader sense of flexibility of mind, of changing personal habits or your environmental situation you're in. And the general principles, I believe, apply, but right now we're working on them more engineering-oriented things.
Sure, sure. I think it's all in the same, you know, process there. As we were talking, I was thinking about a book that I had read a few years ago, The Tipping Point.
Yes.
And there's a lot there that is what you're talking about. It's some who are the, at least the critical people or those who think about it differently or set a meme or a pattern or a thought, and if it gets picked up or not, and how, you know, they, I think they talk about it after maybe the thought has been there or the idea or the product or whatever, and then it gets adopted. But it is really, I could certainly see you fleshing that out and what potential that could have for the distribution of thought across anything, you know, if because everything involves creativity no matter what the discipline that you may be looking at.
Yeah, so one idea that leads me to is I want to take my techniques and I'm putting them in software, but one crucial feature of this is that to get into a collaborative problem solving.
Okay.
And so people could go to this website and you might not be able to solve the whole problem, but you might notice an obscure feature that no one else has noticed. And then the next person who comes to the site says, oh, I know what to do with that obscure feature.
Okay.
So trying to provide this framework of obscure features of the problem and then building, using them to do something as kind of a framework in which people can collaborate on problem solving. So that's the way I envision part of the tipping point happening, is that one person just notices something that no one else has noticed before. And then the next person knows what to do with it, and
exactly,
and they take off from there.
It really makes you think about whether it's in a collaborative environment there for engineering or software or really any of our day-to-day discussions. I would imagine part of this is what's happening as people come up with, say, ad campaigns or any kind of creative work, is just throw out a bunch of things and then see if anyone else can piece it together to something that could be effective. It really is. It's so exciting. I mean, this is really interesting because you're tearing apart kind of part of the things to understand what is it exactly that allows us to be creative. And in being creative, I guess it's in thinking differently than we automatically do.
Yeah, it's very much thinking differently and knowing how to, when to let your habits guide you and when to have a sense where I know I need to just get beyond my habit just a little bit and there's something on the horizon that that might be a better way.
Yeah, it's what have you found, at least this far in your research, what are some of the reasons that we don't kind of fall out of the of that habit? I mean, understand in terms of we need that, there is a purpose for habit. There's, you know, recent research that looks at, you know, the brain is also saving energy when it goes into a habit, burns less energy. So there's an evolutionary part to that as well. But what have you found have been some of the reasons that people find it very hard to maybe go to the obscure or think outside the box as much as that has been that term has been overused?
Right. Well, the thing is that if I just tell you seek the obscure, it's a great mantra.
Yes.
But I haven't helped you at all. So I have to tell you more than that. I have to tell you how to seek the obscure.
Yes.
And so, and in the engineering realm, I have this elaborate category system of these 32 types of features.
Okay.
That a physical object can have. So it has all the common ones, size, shape, material, but it has all these others that are less noticed. And so by providing you this 32 feature types, I kind of show you a landscape of what is outside the box. Because on your own, you don't know where to begin.
Yeah.
You don't know that you're stuck. For example, I've just for a candle company, they wanted some new candle designs, and so I as a experimenter, I had people list out all the features of candles that they could come up with in 4 minutes, and then I categorized them in my 32 types of features, and people overlooked about 20 of those categories. Over 60% of those categories were left blank. And so when I went in and I said, okay, people have overlooked, no one mentions motion of a candle. They don't say a candle is motionless. They wouldn't even become aware of that.
Sure.
But I say, okay, I'm going to try to make a candle get in motion of its own dynamics. And so I looked around and I said, no one mentioned anything about weight. No one mentioned that candles lose weight when they burn. So I took those two ideas and said, okay, I'm going to have kind of a scales where a candle's on one side and a weight's on the other. And as it loses weight, it moves up. And just for fun, I'll put a snuffer at the top. So now I got this self-snuffing candle that'll burn for a while.
How
about
that? And then it
burns itself, you know, extinguishes itself. So after a while. So that's an example where the 32 types of features provided kind of a landscape and told me what roads to go down. Go down the road of motion because that's overlooked. Go down the road of weight because that was overlooked. And it gives me pathways to explore instead of just seek the obscure.
Yes, exactly. So as I understand that then, these are the 32 directions or ways or categories are fixed regardless of the problem. Is that correct? I mean, you apply that. It's kind of the outline or the framework for thinking about a particular problem or issue?
Yeah, with physical objects, we found that these 32 are very broad and they kind of span the space of what's possible. Now, for other domains like comedy writing, we have to create a new map. Because you're dealing with human situations, which are much richer than physical objects. And so my students are starting to expand the map of in this bigger way of all the things that could be involved in a human situation.
That's amazing.
It's quite a task, but they'll get enough of it where they can start noticing unusual things.
Yeah, I wonder if that's beyond just being able to teach people, because it seems like what you're saying is, okay, think outside the box, but a person is saying, wait a minute, I don't even know what's outside the box. Can you at least help me? And you're saying, well, here's how you can go if you want to think outside the box. I would imagine for the comedy writers, how much of it is, do I find these different ways of thinking, or do I also see there are patterns, even if someone might have done it randomly, successfully being a comic, that now one is able to kind of label what's been effective or not because they're putting them into those categories? How much of it is almost retrofitted to at least understand where it's going?
Yeah, I believe that a lot of comics would have this innate ability to do this, and then we can see the leaps that they've made and kind of systematize it a little bit more so the rest of us can improve our comic potential.
Yeah.
But they would, you know, maybe never be able to reach their raw talent. But I'm not in, I just want to improve everybody's ability, not promise that they'll be a creative genius at the end.
No, but as we had said earlier, you know, this is something that would apply to whatever each individual person is doing. You happen to be doing it now for the physical sciences and engineering, but,
right.
You know, I could certainly see just even in what I do in terms of understanding different ways to help somebody, whether it is making them laugh, if you will, or if it is, in my case, helping them with a certain way of looking at a therapy or at a certain situation that someone brings to me. because I think we all kind of battle between this wish, if you will. I noticed in the article that I read, Nietzsche and Heidegger that you mentioned. So, you know, I'm an existentialist at heart as well with my therapy. So it's always this barrier between wanting all the freedom that we want, but also we're also overwhelmed by it too. So we kind of figure what of each is good for us, but those are not concrete walls. Those are just paper. We can push on those and really challenge ourselves when we're ready. So I would imagine that what you're doing, at least trying to understand these patterns, is helping people kind of say, you can push these walls. They're not as fixed as you think, and you can really achieve so much more.
Right. I think the big thing that's happening now in creativity research is starting to map out the landscape outside the box instead of just, well, think outside the box.
Yes.
And so there's an interesting idea by Stuart Kaufman on how inventions proceed. And so he has this space, this circle he calls the actual. That's all the inventions and we have right now. And then there's this periphery he calls the adjacent possible.
Okay.
And so that's the most likely move we're going to make next. And so, you don't go from, if you're in the communications business, you don't go from two cans and a string to the iPhone.
Yes.
There's this progression. And so people could go from this vibrating wire and connected two cans to a more sophisticated notion of wire, then wireless, and then the notion of phone can do so much more. So there is, you can map out in this progression of always what's adjacent to this, the actual right now, what's adjacent to it, what's adjacent. And so that's kind of your image of pushing back the paper walls. And so he's got this notion of how it expands, and I think it's a nice image.
It really is. I mean, I think that there's, in some ways, I've applied that myself as people, you know, say with anxiety and the like, who may be fearful of a certain circumstance or overwhelmed with things that they have to do. Either way, whether you think about it or not, there is that very next thing that has to happen. But there's this expectation of, oh my gosh, what if this doesn't work out or whatever, the end goal, if you will. And it sounds like this is very much like that. You have to go to the next thing that is enough of a difference, or that proves something, or that is invented, until it moves along till the very next thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. If you put too much pressure, create something brand new no one's ever seen before, that just can be too daunting. And so if you back up, well, take the features of a phone and let's start tweaking, let's start playing at the periphery, and we'll make progress. Oh, I didn't notice this before. Let's build on that. I didn't notice this before. We'll build on that. So that's a more realistic notion of creativity and moving these walls back, as opposed to just trying to hit a home run that's way out there and you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think about when back in the 90s, I guess, when cable modems were around and you know, there were people talking about someday we're going to have these plastic newspapers that'll wirelessly, they'll update all the time and we'll be able to look at them. And it seems so futuristic. And then, you know, I hadn't even thought about it until probably the second iteration of the iPad. But it's, you know, but it just seemed very natural that this was what was coming next. But yet I think back and that's what it was. I mean, this is where we were imagining. It's not quite flexible, but I'm sure that will come in some point. But it took every step along the way to finally get here. But we, I guess we have kind of gotten there, no matter how futuristic or out of the box it seemed in the early 90s.
Right. And that's why science fiction writers are so important in some ways, because they're visionaries. They have no idea how the technology would work for communicators on Star Trek, for example.
Yes.
And they just posit this end goal out there, and we kind of know how to I was like, oh, well, let's move towards it gradually. And then we have everyone's carries around a cell phone,
isn't that incredible?
Science fiction show.
Well, gosh. Okay, so I've got to ask you, well, two things that are really that have come here that I want to ask you. First off, what is it about those folks, the science fiction writers, who get it out of nowhere? As opposed to, you know, say someone like me who is just like, you know, it took iPad 2 for me to say, oh, yeah, wireless kind of newspaper. I'm glad I put that together, you know. What's the difference there? Why does that happen?
Yeah, so that I haven't really studied the personalities yes. of these types of people.
Yeah.
I've been more in the business of trying to make everybody a little more creative.
Right, right.
But they just must have some habit or partially innate, you know, nature and nurture, where they just are not bounded by the rest of us. They look at outside the box. What box?
Yeah.
There's no box. And so some people are just have a wider view than others, but I haven't looked really into their the personality traits of those people.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's ever any one thing that it could be anyway, to be fair. I mean, I think I've always been amazed, friends of mine who are artists, and, you know, they'll look at a corner or a table, and, you know, they'll be able to see negative light and shadow or shapes that pop up that I can't even see, or even when they draw it, to be able to appreciate it. So I guess it is. It's. I would imagine it's part of our personality, and maybe part of our biology, you know, as well. In that, whether it's literal creativity in the arts, or if it's a different type of creativity, like the engineering work that you're working on and consulting on.
Yeah, I'm just starting to have more dialogues with artists.
Yes.
I'm teaching a couple classes at Bennington College, and there's a great pool of artists there. So I'm just beginning this conversation with them, because they come in and they're dancers and they're writers and they're very passionate about their art, and they want to know how to move it, you know, a little bit further.
Yeah, how do I push it?
So I'm excited to continue this conversation with them and move that direction.
Wow, it just sounds like fascinating research. I mean, I was blown away by it the first time I read it, and it just cracked me up that I had already had, you know, you in that folder in terms of someone I wanted to call until I saw it again. If people want to get more information about you, about what you're doing, more about your theories, how can they get in touch with you?
Yes, I can. The best way is through my email address.
Okay.
So, A. McCaffer, and it's a bad, that's what they gave me, AMCCAFFR at psych.umass.edu.
And that's fine. It's and we will absolutely have that up on the post for the podcast, and we'll do a direct link to that, or however you would like us to do that. We'll be happy to do. Where do you see this going? Are you putting it together? Do you foresee a book? Do you foresee kind of doing consulting or more of the research? Where do you see yourself going here in the future with this work?
I'm focusing all my efforts on the software product. I'm going to have this website.
Yes.
And which people can go to solve problems. And the techniques will guide them to obscure features. And there'll be this collaborative element where people can work on the same problem. And that's where I'm focusing everything right now. But I'm open to doing a workshop here or there, too.
I think it's just it's fascinating, and hopefully we will see it both in terms of you being interviewed again and again on this, and how that begins to manifest. Again, for Dr. McCaffrey, his email is amccaffr at psych.umass.edu. We will have that up on our website as well, and we'll continue to follow this. I certainly will. I find it incredibly fascinating, and I just can't thank you enough for being on the Healthy Mind today.
Well, I enjoyed it very much. Thank you for having me.
And hopefully we can at least twist your arm to come back on again in the future to give us an update on where that's all coming.
Oh, yeah. I got new techniques coming down the pipeline that I can't quite talk about yet, but they're going to be exciting to help people.
That is wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Tony McCaffrey from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. Thank you again, sir, for being on the program.
All right. Thank you very much.
And there goes Dr. Tony McCaffrey from the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Wow. That was just incredible, I have to say. I don't know what it is about this topic, but it was fantastic. I mean, what a brilliant mind to really be able to be tapping in to those parts of our minds to kind of take us outside of the box. We have to learn, we have to practice, but at least from what Dr. McCaffrey is telling us, that is something that we can learn to do. We can learn to be more creative. And I think that's such an important message because it really shows us the power that we have inside of us, the power that you have in you right now. Whether it is to make important change in your life for the better, take on a new project, or be creative in some way that enriches your life and makes you and those around you happier, you can do it. You can do it. Never doubt that. Please don't doubt that about yourself. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again, you and I. We have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. Another very special thank you to Dr. Anthony McCaffrey from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst for joining us on the program. I really do appreciate his time, and I really look forward to him being back on the broadcast again sometime in the future. Don't forget the website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. The articles will be up there just about every day. I'm trying to do my best to get articles up there every day so it's of a value to you. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. That's at Dr. Zafiridis. And if you have any questions, comments, criticisms, anything, I want to hear from you. So keep those emails coming. You can email me at peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Broadcasting Network, I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody. And I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.